This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Dan, if I'm a new coach, you know, and I've got young kids and, you know, I'm trying to create good habits. I'm also trying to break some bad habits. Where do I start? How do I know, you know, where I'm at in the process?
Yeah, I think the luxury we have as coaches is right away where we are in a position of influence to those in which we coach, which is a really good thing. And with that being said, you know, every time we're around our kids, and especially in season, we have such high levels of exposure. We have a chance to educate these young athletes on what our expectations are and what our standards are for them, and then assist them in the creation of habits. And also we get to judge them on whether they're understanding and actually making progress on those habits every single day that they're in practice. I mean, really, that's what coaching is. You're coaching habits every single day and trying to, you know, get as close to the perfection line as you can in the habits that you teach, and holding them accountable to the process, you know, that leads to consistent habits. You know what I mean? So it's just important that a coach is not checked out and sitting back. And this goes everything from team, from stretch to how you walk out there to how they're bringing the equipment out, everything. You can create habits for each of those things. But habits, especially when it comes to coaching, it's enforcing your expectation.
So we've been doing that. It's just a matter of one, making sure we're doing the right things, and two, we're staying consistent.
Exactly. And it's also being involved. I mean, I've seen so many coaches, you know, I use stretch for an example because it's close to my heart. I'm always the one that's running it, you know, as a performance coach and strength and conditioning coach, but so many coaches just check out during stretch and it ends up being a talk session. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to teach. And what I used to love about Joe Torre and Joe Girardi, you know, when our team was in team stretch, each of them would go around and talk, use that as an opportunity to talk to each player just for a couple minutes to see where they're at today, see how they're feeling, just get their viewpoint on things. So every moment that we have as a coach that we can spend with our team, you know, we could start to learn where our players are at, what they're dealing with, and we can actually, you know, enforce the habits and the expectations that we have for our own players.
You know, I had Tony La Russa on the podcast, and I was able to work with him at the World Baseball Classic for a week and kind of watch how he does things. You know, you've been around some great managers. Let's talk about that. The managers you've been around, what habits make them the people they are, you know, why they're so good? What are some of the things that they do day in and day out that creates, you know, good habits and also, you know, gives them the ability to do what they can?
I think the first thing that makes them so good, again, we'll talk about, you know, Torre and we'll talk about, you know, Girardi, is that, you know, they're the same person day after day. Whether we win or whether we lose, you're not seeing a high and you're not seeing a low. It's a very consistent set of behaviors. And with that, they create a very stable atmosphere for the players. And they create a calm for the players, which is super important. That was really the most important thing that I saw that they brought every single day was their own consistency of their mood, of their own personal self. And I thought that was so important. And the players, you know, because the life of a player is up and down. So they need a stable force around them. So that was one. And I thought what they did a really good job of was right from the beginning, day one of spring training, here's my expectations. Number one, obviously we wanted to win a World Series. In New York, you know, getting to the playoffs is not good enough. You must win the World Series. That's why we are all here. So the expectation, once again, clearly defined, we knew why we were here and what we were out to do. And then from there, there was really only a couple of rules. And, you know, biggest rule was be on time, respect each other. And everything kind of worked off of those three rules. Win the World Series is the goal, you know, respect each other, and be on time. Very simple. And that was what was enforced, and everything kind of stemmed off of that.
Now, I want to discuss a player as far as, you know, you take a young player, high school player, college player, you got the college coach or high school coach, and we identify a particular issue that needs to be changed, whether it's in warmups, whether it's in hitting, pitching. So we've got to break a certain habit that they're doing incorrectly. Take us through the process with, you know, what does a coach do? He shows them what they need to correct. Now, what does the player do? Is it a weekly process, a daily? Is it by a bite at a time? You know, where do we start?
Well, what I see is a lot of young coaches specifically, they overcoach and they give the player too many inputs. And with too many inputs, the player typically shuts down. So I've always felt you go global to specific. Hey, here's what I want you to do. And here's what we're going to work on today. And then you're going to put that process together over time. So instead of saying, hey, you're going to work on this, and this, and the player says, where do I start? Here's what we're looking to achieve. Here's what I'm seeing from you. And today we're going to work on this. So we've totally simplified and streamlined the process. So the player knows what our overall goal is. He knows what he's doing incorrectly. And he knows that today we're going to start with this. And then what we're going to do is we're going to move you through that process. And each day we're going to work on a little bit, as opposed to trying to do everything all at once. And that's where, I see a lot of overcoaching. And when you overcoach, the player oftentimes is really not retaining anything that you're saying, especially in today's society, because it's an Instagram culture where we're swiping and we're just looking for what's next. It's like, hey, coach, get to the point. So that's what I do. I go global to specific.
And when we're talking about nutrition, I mean, you can, you know, talk about nutrition in sports and in baseball, but also nutrition in general, the average person, you know, we're trying to break a habit. We're trying to break a habit of eating incorrectly. That's not easy because of the fact that, you know, I may start off doing something for the first 3-4 days and doing it correctly. And then I fall back into that, you know, bad habit that, you know, that I had. What advice you got there for somebody, again, that is struggling doing that?
Yeah. Again, kind of the same concept that, you know, as we related to sport is if you think about it, hey, look, here's the big goal, right? Let's just use it in terms of, you know, losing 10 pounds. Hey, the big goal is we want to lose 10 pounds. Here's what you're doing each and every day that's inhibiting you from reaching that goal. And then today, what we're going to focus on is we're going to win the meal. Here's what I want your meal to look like. I just want you to win the meal, one meal at a time. Sit down again, win the meal. And then I teach them how to structure their plate so they know how to actually eat correctly. And it's simple. I want a protein, and then I also want a vegetable. And then for those athletes that are competing, here's the starches that you're able to have. You know, for guys that are 40 and over in the coaching world, you know, that want to get rid of a gut, I'm less, lenient with the starches, if you will. But again, it's about simplification and showing them the importance of the process. And if you think big, you're going to get yourself in trouble because you're going to spook yourself. So here's the goal. Here's the big goal. I want to lose 10. Here's what you're doing. You know, you're eating too many sugars and too many refined carbohydrates. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to win every meal. And here's what I want your meals to look like. So when you look down and you see your plate, here's what it should look like. If it doesn't look like that, there's no way you're going to achieve that goal. And it's just simplify everything to its most basic components. And that's how you win. Process is what helps you win long term. You can't chop down an oak tree, you know, with a butter knife. But you can eventually get that tree down if you just cut a little bit every single day. It's going to take you a lot of time, but you can do some damage to that trunk.
You know, Dan, what everything we're teaching then in the game of baseball, if we don't understand the benefits of creating good habits, the rest of it is really worthless because we're not going to be able to get anything done.
Yeah, and I think on the other end too, P, is like, ask ourselves, why do we even need habits, right? The habits are the process. The habits are the little things that lead to the big goal of winning. You know, so that's how it relates. So that's why you can't let people slide on the little things, because the little things, we always say, are the big things.
Boy, and if I'm, if coaches out there that are working with young kids, parents, I hope you're listening, because, again, we keep going back that if we can get these young kids on, started with very good habits, it's going to make it easier for them when they get to high school and college. And it's going to make it easier for the high school coach and the college coach, because they're going to be able to go on to do other things to train them in other areas, where if they haven't created good habits, that's going to be really hard. So I want to ask you, Dana, when you look at a guy like, Derek Jeter, he's got obviously some great habits at the big league level. Where did it start for Jeter? Did it start when he was younger?
Yeah, for a guy like Jeter, it definitely started in the home. That's where it began. There was an expectation set by his parents that he, had to adhere to. And that repetition and adherence to what they expected day after day after day after day is what created a very disciplined Derek Jeter. And, Derek is incredible. I mean, there's a couple of things I wrote in the book. One thing that he told me was, "Hey, Dana, if somebody doesn't respect your time, they don't respect you." Mm-hmm. And what led to that conversation was one morning I was supposed to meet a player down in the gym, and that player never showed up, and I had Derek after him. Derek got in about 10 minutes earlier and said, "Hey, what are you doing here, Dana?" And I said, "Well, I was waiting for so-and-so." And he said, "What, the guy never showed?" I said, "Yeah, he didn't show up today." He said, "Let me tell you something about people. If they don't respect your time, they don't respect you." And this was a guy in Derek Jeter that would train Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with me at 3:00. And that was clockwork. If he was running a minute late and he knew he was running a minute late, he'd call me 15 minutes earlier and say, "Hey, I'm running late. Here's when we're going to start." And if he was not able to meet that 3:00 start time or 3:05 start time, it was like he'd call the audible and say, "Listen, we're going to work out right after BP." And that's when we'd get it in. But he never missed. And he always called ahead or sent a text message. Most of the time, though, it was a phone call. And, same thing. Another habit is how he dressed. We had sometimes where we were able to wear, let's just say khakis, and you could wear an untucked shirt or just a polo. With Derek Jeter, it was always a suit and tie, because that's how he was taught. So what did I do? The power of influence of Derek Jeter? I wore a suit and tie. What did other players do? They wore a suit and tie. So we had a loose dress code, but nobody followed it. They followed the leader.
Very interesting. What about when it comes to batting practice? Was there something particular that Jeter did that, he did day in and day out that, again, made them the player he is?
The biggest thing is he wasn't an over-hitter, and he wasn't a guy that spent an excessive amount of time taking infield. Very simple. Everything was simplified based on the question of, "Hey, I'm Derek Jeter, and what do I need? What does Derek Jeter need today?" And he was very clear on what he needed, and he was also very good at telling the coaches what he needed to actually work on. Now, again, I'm not expecting a middle school kid to be able to tell a coach that, but I'm just illustrating at the professional level, this is somebody that knew himself so well that he was able to give the coach insight into what he needed. And then it made it easy for the coach. It opened up a very clear and open dialogue that said, "Hey, here's what I'm hitting Jeet today. We're hitting in the hole and going across the diamond, or we're working on DPs. And that's what we're doing today."
When you wrote the book Habits of a Champion, you obviously have a lot of experience. So you put your experience within that book. What about research? Did you have to do research, or was your research mostly what you've done all your life?
Yeah. So, for me, I mean, I have a degree in sports medicine, which is heavily science-based and research-based. But I always tell people, my skill set was not earned in the classroom. My skill set was earned on the field. It was earned when a guy like Andy Pettit comes in screaming and saying, "Hey, my leg's cramping. What do I do? Help me." And he had to go out and pitch the next inning. So I wanted to write a book that was practical, and it was an easy read, easy to understand. And a lot of my concepts are research-based, but they're not in terms of they're practically, it's written from a practical standpoint. But it, my knowledge, you know, when you dial it all back and you start to look at what I'm writing, it there's always research to support, you know, what's being said, but I didn't want it to be a research-based book. I wanted it to be a practical book of real life case studies that people could say, hey, you know what? That's good. That's a great point. I feel that way too. Thanks for reinforcing it.
You know what? That's a great place to continue. Give us a couple practical areas that, you know, you have in the book that could help coaches out there.
Yeah. So like one of the chapters in the book is called Fit to Win. So, you know, there's a direct correlation between your overall physical preparedness and readiness and the longevity and how long you're going to play the game, how well you're going to perform. So I wanted to reinforce the point of just the importance of training, not just on field in terms of the skills and the fundamentals, but getting your body physically prepared, which in turn will make you mentally stronger. You know, because you're getting used to and getting the athlete used to pushing themselves and understanding how their body works and pushing themselves past comfortable. And in a sport like baseball, what I always used to do is tell my players, listen, we are going to out-train the sport of baseball. So whatever the game demands of you is not going to challenge you. We're going to stay above that line. And by staying above that line, you're going to be able to focus on the execution of the fundamental skills. But I just want to make sure that you never have to question your athletic and physical preparedness and readiness. That was really, really important for me. You know, that was something I really believed in, being overly prepared physically to play the game, you know, that we play. The other lesson that I put in the book is...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was something that I got from Mariano Rivera. And, you know, I was a kid that grew up in the New York area. I watched Mariano's first pitch back in 1995. And I was mesmerized by this man's disposition more than anything. I mean, obviously his pitching is amazing, but just his mental fortitude and disposition was incredible to me. So a couple of years ago, he called me up. We live right around the corner from each other. And he said, listen, can you come to the house? I want you to stretch me. And I said, okay, I'll be right over. And so we went down to his basement and start stretching him and working on him. And I said, Mo, I got to ask you a question. And he said, what, buddy? What do you want to ask me? I said, how do you do it? How do you do it? And he looked at me and he said, do what? And I said, how do you get it done in the biggest situations? You know, the highest stress situations. He says, buddy, I do three things. He says, number one, I quiet the noise. Number two, I slow everything down. And number three, I throw one pitch at a time. That's what I do. And it was an amazing like three-step process. And it just basically described him being in the zone and being able to adjust his volume, much like we would adjust our music volume on our iPhone. He had the ability to hit the switch and turn it low and turn it off. And I said, well, that's great. But what about the big situations, you know, like the World Series? And it was like the most profound statement. He said, buddy, there are no big situations. The situations are only big in our mind. We decide what's a big situation. And I said, wow, amazing. He said, everything's the same. You decide what you give life to. So really powerful lessons that he showed and told me that day. And it was life-changing.
Well, I'll tell you what. That in itself makes the podcast right there. That is some great stuff. Now, when you were with him, I mean, did you want to ask him, you know, quiet the noise? I mean, you know, how did you do that? I mean, where does that start from? Was he trained to do that somewhere? Where did it begin?
Well, the biggest thing was with him is always it's about trusting yourself. And the noise gets loud when you don't trust yourself. And you start to panic and you start to have fear And the noise, it's kind of symbolic, right? Because we think of the noise as just stadium noise. But the reality is we have more noise in our head than any stadium could ever create. And that's was something that he has taught me through the years, is that it's what you tell yourself. If you actually listen to those negative things and those thoughts of panic, you will actually become negative and you will actually start to panic, which will feel like the noise is extremely loud. But if you can get yourself to calm down by thinking about the right things and aligning your thoughts correctly, your whole nervous system will actually quiet itself. It'll downshift itself and you'll be able to be in the moment.
So, and then when you talk about one pitch at a time, very similar to what you just mentioned then, right? I mean, you're thinking about that next pitch only.
Yeah, it's just, you're so in the moment that you're thinking about, again, like I said, win the meal. You're just trying to win that one pitch. I'll give you another example. A guy like Andy Pettit, he used to visualize the action on every pitch and where it was going to go into the glove before he threw every pitch. So, you know, if you remember Andy Pettit, he would always pull his hat down low and you would just see his eyes in between his glove and his hat. And I asked him, because he was my breakfast buddy. We'd go to breakfast every day on the road. And I said, Andy, what is that? Like, what is that thing that you do? And he said, well, what I do is I block everything out. It's almost like a horse putting on blinders. And I'm able to, I'm throwing the pitch before I throw it. Wow. And then I'm matching what I just saw when I actually throw the pitch. Wow. So he's visualizing success before he actually takes the physical action. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's been doing that for a while because, you know, again, we're talking about habits. He continues to do that throughout his whole career.
Exactly. And before a game, any game that Andy Pettit pitched, it was the same preparatory routine starting at the same time based on game time. And he went through the same routine every single year. And his in-between days, there was another routine that existed. And then right before the game, he'd always come in his sneakers, pinstripe pants, and his undershirt, and he'd literally pitch in front of the mirror for about 5 minutes or so and actually visualizing every aspect of his delivery. He was pitching a game in my weight room in front of a mirror before he actually went out to throw his bullpen.
You know, and that's why I'm hoping that not only coaches, but parents and kids, especially young kids, you know, or high school kids that are listening to this, because, you know, many times a high school coach will instruct, you know, their players or put a system in where, you know, they're doing some of these things at practice. And then they tell them, you know, be doing these things at home, create this good habit. And sometimes I remember when I was in school, I thought it was silly, you know, I didn't want to do it. But it just goes to show how important it is to start as young as possible to create these good habits. Did the Rivera have bullpen things that he did that you saw that were, you know, that he did consistently that kind of helped him?
Yeah, you know, Mo was really an interesting guy. Like I always say, he had an unbelievable cutter, but the real power of Mariano Rivera was in between his ears. He was that's where he won. He knew he was going to beat you. But the one thing that he would always say, and I'll tell you how, you know, how I know this, but he'd say, pitch to contact. Don't fear contact. Pitch to contact. And he saw apprehensive pitchers would never pitch to contact. They were always trying to pitch around the back. But Mariano was unbelievable because, you know, his big thing and the way he prepared, different than a guy like Andy, he would actually get a massage on his legs for the first three innings of the game, okay? Mm-hmm. The fourth inning, he'd go get dressed. And the fifth inning, he would come and see me in my weight room every single day, okay? So, and when he got there, I'd work on his arm, I'd massage his arm, I'd stretch him, and that was our routine. So a massage and a stretch was how he prepared for every single game and watching the game at the same time. But it was, his whole thing is about being calm. That was Mo. He wasn't doing yoga or anything like that. He wasn't even doing formal meditation. But it was all about calm. And, you know, listen, he's a religious guy, and the prayer was his form of meditation. Mm-hmm. But it was always about building himself and building his self-belief to the point where he knew that I can't be taken down. The only one that could take me down is myself. So there was no worry about the externals taking him down. It was just a power that was within him that was incredible.
You know, I remember, and it's bringing up some memories. I remember I was in independent ball for quite a few years, and one of our players, Jack Voigt, played for the Orioles in the big leagues. And he had a routine, you know, from the minute that he arrived at the stadium, it was the same routine, whether he went to the bathroom, what he read in the bathroom, and, you know, and I mean, how he dressed and what he dressed, some of the things that you're talking about. And, you know, and I asked him one day, I said, you know, what is this? How come you're doing the same thing all the time? And, you know, and he mentioned that playing with Cal Ripken, Ripken had this same thing where, you know, they continue to do the same thing no matter what. Is there a time, and I just thought about this, is there a time when you've had that routine, which is, you know, creating a good habit, is there a time you change it?
I think you change things. I never believed, and working with these guys, I never believed in changing an entire routine,
mm-hmm.
Especially during the season, but you can tweak things, and there may be parts of your routine that are no longer serving you. So as a player, you got to know what's serving you and what is no longer serving you. And what I find is, you know, you can't base that on a slump. You know, Mark Teixeira one year was struggling for about 4 weeks. He wasn't getting hits. He was really struggling. And I said, Tex, I actually asked him the question. I said, are you going to change your routine? And he says, no. He goes, I'm going to double down on it. He said, I'm going to actually, you know, lock it in even tighter. He said, because, you know, right now I'm in a slump. He says, but the slumps are not going to last forever. So there's no reason for me to change. If it's something that continues to go on and on and on and on, then I know I have to make some adjustments. But right now, it's just the season within the season. And, you know, that's the way he looked at it. And a guy like Derek Jeter, he always used to say, listen, if I'm in a slump, that means I'm getting closer to my next hit. You know, so it was... Yeah. That sort of mentality.
It's how they looked at it in a lot of ways.
That's the thing. You know, I always listen. I focus a lot on the physical because that's my trade, enhancing speed, strength, power, and rehabilitation and all that. But the reality is these guys, their mental strength is so far ahead of everybody else, especially the guys that last the longest. They're built in a very different way than the rest.
Sure. Now, what about, you know, I was thinking about the managers and coaches and the head guys at any level. You know, as coaches, obviously, we've got to be able to create our own, you know, consistent routine because it's got to be tough to sell something to players if you're not doing it.
Yeah, totally. And what you're seeing now in professional sports, you're actually seeing a lot of managers and coaches getting cooked up because, you know, they're putting so much time on the job, but they're not taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, what happens? You know, your health starts to go. I mean, we've been reading about it. You know, these managers that have had, you know, heart scares and health issues and things like that. You know, you got to put, I always say, as a leader, you got to put yourself first. You have to be selfish so you can be selfless. And if you do that, your team is going to be inspired by you. And I call it the power of influence. You're going to be influencing them to want to take more action and more control and leadership of themselves because they're seeing the coach do it and they're seeing the manager do it. So, you know, in baseball, oftentimes you see a lot of, you know, managers that are, you know, borderline obese at times.
Yes.
But they're going to tell the coach, the player, hey, you got to get in shape. It doesn't make sense. You know, it's like the doctor that's going out and smoking a pack of cigarettes, you know, between each day. You know, there's a disconnect there. So your positive habits can carry, you know, a lot of weight and really help impact that team. I mean, in basketball, you look at Coach Krzyzewski, Coach K, he's got his way of doing things. He's got his standards, and that all carries into how his players, you know, represent themselves and go about their business. Same thing.
That's awesome. I love that, because I think you're right. I think, you know, the manager, the coach, the head guy, he's the leader. So he needs to lead by example. Dana, in everything that we've talked about, what have we missed here? What area do we need to get into that is important for our coaches around the world and in the U.S. to make sure they hear this so that way they can become better in what they do?
Yeah, I think that it's so important that coaches understand what their role and what their job is as it relates to the development of their players. You can't just be there to put names on a lineup card and, you know, host batting practice and a little bit of infield, but you have an opportunity and an obligation to make an impact on the people that you coach. And there's nothing more rewarding than having an athlete that you got a chance to impact and influence go on and do great things, whether it's in the world of sports or in the world of life and business, and they come back and they cite you for teaching them how to be great. And that's, for me, has always been the greatest reward. I mean, I'm getting emails now from players I coached 10 years ago saying, hey, you changed my life, with a simple conversation that I, as the coach, don't even remember anymore. So the word legacy, although it sounds grandiose and something that may be unachievable for many, every day we have a chance to build our legacy as a coach. And as a coach, it's not about you. It's about the people that you get a chance to impact and influence every single day. And they'll do all the talking for you. And you can't forget that. Give. And that's the best way to feel a sense of fulfillment and just incredible about what you do and what you stand for and what you've done with your time here.
And lastly, we're going to end it with a conversation that you and I had a little bit offline, because I asked you about this and I want our audience to hear it. Because of the fact that, you know, culture, you know, definitely helps, because, you know, we talked about the Japanese, you know, I've been to Japan a lot, and, you know, they do the same routine over and over and over again. And they're very consistent at it. So the culture that a coach creates allows you to create these great habits. The Japanese, for me, are some of the best examples. Are there others out there, you know, that you've looked at and said, you know, they've really created a great culture, which also has developed in great habits?
I think, you know, going back to the Japanese, I think they've really taught us a lot on how, you know, what discipline looks like. You know, when I would work with the Japanese players, it was incredible to see that, you know, just their level of discipline. I mean, we would have a game end at midnight, and a player, if he was scheduled to lift, you know, he would show up. I gotta say, I haven't seen many other cultures with that level of discipline. I mean, you've seen the Japanese, you'll also see it in, you know, players like Chin-Ming Wong. He was from Taiwan. That area of the world is so habit driven, and they truly attribute habits to success. There's a direct line that links your habits to your success. I haven't, again, seen it, in many other places. Where I have also seen it, I should correct myself, is in some really strong college programs. Guys that come out of programs where discipline is actually a one of the core building blocks of a program. So sprinkled throughout, you know, the collegiate ranks, I'm sure sprinkled throughout the high school ranks, you know, there are programs that have high demands on their players. But overall, I think the Japanese those from Taiwan and Korea, they definitely take the cake.
Dana, if you were in Asia and you had a program there, I want to ask you this, because I'm thinking, if you're in Asia and you had a program and they're doing well, but, you know, I'm a coach and I see something that they can do better, but they've been doing it for a long time. This might be a loaded question, but
Yeah.
Do I make that change? But if they're doing really well, do I make that change because I know it can make them even better?
Yeah. Well, you know what? You do make little changes. Now, that's you can't be afraid to change because everybody's evolving. Even if you don't want to change, your players every year are changing, and even, you know, culturally, everybody is advancing in different ways. So I'm never afraid to make a change. You can stick with, hey, if it's not broken, don't fix it. But you're just moving everybody along sequentially. That's why I said before, I don't believe in dramatic changes. Like sometimes organizations will make a public announcement, hey, we're making a change in our philosophy. And it's like you set yourself up oftentimes to fail with that sort of, you know, public address announcement. Yep. But I do believe in tweaking, just tweak and tweak and tweak. And, you know, when I first took over the program with the Yankees, you know, it was a very different place. I mean, it was a comfortable program. Guys did what they had to do. And I had to strategically create change. But the biggest mistake I could make was to change everything all at once. And we also don't want to just change to change. I had very clear goals and objectives, and I knew that I had to make changes in order for me to hit those, you know, goals and objectives. And, you know, I did it, and it worked out. And, you know, I've heard managers even say, listen, sometimes they'll mess with report times. They'll change things up just because the team needs to be shaken up a little bit. And that's okay too. So I don't believe in dramatic change. I believe in little changes and little tweaks, and only if they match up with what the objectives are.
Wow, so well said. And I didn't realize that, but that you had to go in and, you know, develop a program for the Yankees, and they were used to something else, obviously. That's a great, great story. I love that. And then I want people to know how to get your book, Habits of a Champion. No one becomes a champion by accident. Let everybody know how can you get this book? Because coaches need to purchase this book. If habits is the number one thing that needs to be developed when you're training athletes.
Yeah. So you can go on Amazon.com. Also on my website, DanaCavalia.com as well. That's where those are the two places I have the book. And I also write a daily blog. It's a blog on leadership, and it's a blog on, you know, self-care and you know, again, different habits and through stories. And that's on DanaCavalia.com as well. So I write that Monday to Friday.
All right, folks. And we're going to put all that on the show notes so you can go right to the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. We'll have it on the show notes, all of Dana's information. Dana, we always end the show this way because, you know, there's so much you could talk about and there's only so much time. If there's something particular that, you know, you felt that we needed to discuss, you just want to talk or mention it to the coaches around the world. You've got your time, and then we'll close it off.
Yeah. So for me, I see a lot of, you know, from the time I started in this career path and in the sport of baseball, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of training going on. And now I see a lot of training going on, physical training, but I encourage coaches to not get too creative with the training. You know, keep it simple. Make sure you're, again, much like the fundamentals of teaching sport, our athletes have to know the fundamentals of weight training. They need to know the fundamentals of speed development. They need to know the fundamentals of a good, solid arm care program. All of those things need to be taught. It can't just be, here's the program and go. So that's something that's really important to me. The other thing is, too, with all the arm injuries that are going on around this country, and so many programs out there that are designed specifically to create velocity, it's a scary thing. And I think if we can create an exposure, I know if we can create an exposure for young athletes, young baseball players, when they first start in this game, associate a good solid arm program for them with warming up and with baseball, I think we're going to reduce a lot of the injuries that are out there. The focus is so much on velocity. But if we could start developing good arm strength through training and a good solid arm exercise program as young athletes and young baseball players, I think we're going to really start to reduce a lot of the injuries that we see. And I also say, when it comes to velocity development, just look at the movement. And if it looks overly aggressive and it looks like something that shouldn't be happening, it probably shouldn't be happening. And that's really it.
I love it. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad you brought that up because of the fact that, you know, when Velocity came out, everybody thought it was the quick fix. That's all you're going to do. So thanks for bringing that out. I think that was very important. Again, that's Dana Cavaglia. He is the owner and founder of Cavaglia Companies. He was the former director of strength and conditioning and performance for the New York Yankees. And you got to get his book just right off the press, Habits of a Champion. No one becomes a champion by accident. We'll have all the information for you on the show notes. Go out and get it. Dana, got to thank you, man. I know you're busy. Thank you so much for being on Baseball Outside the Box.
Awesome. Thanks, Pete.
All right, folks, another great show. I got to go back and listen to it because I know I missed some great stuff, and I'll take my notes. That's what I do all the time, listen to the show again. I want you to email me at petercaliendo@icloud.com. Any suggestions for shows, any comments, how I, you know, if you want to talk about how I need to get better as a host, hey, send me that email. I'm always trying to get better. Don't forget, go to iTunes and Stitcher, help us out, get the show notes out on Baseball Outside the Box. Love to hear from you. And don't forget, a special thank you to Brian Kroc, our producer with the Lineup Media Group, who hosts the show, and our special guest, Dana Cavaglia. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, listen, have a great coaching day, and I'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.